Live from Burbank, California, the world capital of elderly mothers, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he makes no apologies, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, and of course, you members of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, or the FLDS, you people out in the dirt, out on the farm, out in the trenches, out there in the strange shanty houses molesting your kids. How you guys doing? Are you podcasting my show, you freaks? Man, did you see the front page of the L.A. Times?
No.
Have you been watching Big Love with Bill Paxton and Chloe Sevigny and Gene Triplehorn and the other girl who's okay, but not as good as the other two?
That's on cable?
It's on cable. It's on the HBO.
HBO? No,
yeah.
I haven't started watching that yet. I got too many things to watch.
It's amazing. They have this box you put on top of your tube, and it pulls images from space, Jim.
I've been watching Deadliest Catch. I don't have time for Bill Paxton's
fun
anymore.
I'll tell you,
games.
It's not a great show. It's an interesting show, but the most interesting parts of the show are when they go to the compound where the Mormons still practice polygamy, and this is the actual place here. It's an enclave. It's on the border of Arizona and Utah. And there's all sorts of investigations going on that, about child abuse, of course, and rape and molestation and polygamy on top of it. The guy who calls himself the prophet has been indicted. But I'll tell you, on that show, it is the creepiest part and the most interesting part. Why is that stuff interesting? Why are religious fanatics who live off the land and marginalized and having sex with their kids and doing all the wrong that can be done in the name of God, why are they always the most curious? I think I just answered all the questions, didn't I? Why wouldn't that be curious?
They're spooky.
It's sordid and spooky and interesting. But that aside, I don't know why I went off on that.
Because that's where we all came from.
We did?
Yeah. We all came from rural backgrounds and... Yeah, our ancestors did horribly spooky, weird things. Have you ever gone through your genealogy?
With scythes? Is that the name of that tool? A scythe?
Scythe?
That's the thing that the Reaper carries. A scythe? I'm surprised you didn't know that reference, guy.
Oh, you mean Sith.
Is it a Sith?
I don't know.
Oh, maybe it is. I thought it was a scythe. You know what? You say Sith, I say scythe, and I also say shut your hole, man. Why do you got to always make me look bad? What?
I think you're projecting.
I am. I'm kidding, man. So, I've never done my genealogy because one of the Marons did, and it goes back to Russia. It goes back to Russia.
You'll discover some horrible and surprising things.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a minute. Let me tell you about the show we have prepared. We've got Paul Rykoff, Executive Director and Founder of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. He's the author of the new book, Chasing Ghosts, A Soldier's Fight for America from Baghdad to Washington. He was the Operation Truth. That was the original name for people who are curious, who have known Paul Rykoff's work and supported what he does. It was Operation Truth, and it has morphed into IAVA. Trailer Park Boys, Mike Smith and Jonathan Torrens, who portray Bubbles and J-Rock on the show, will be with us. I've just been hipped to the Trailer Park Boys by my buddy Charlie, who's a big fan. They're in town for a few days. They've got 5 seasons of this show. It's a Canadian show. It's out on DVD now. It's pretty funny. I think you'd like it. It all revolves around pot. Mishna Wolf, who is my wife, is going to come on. We've got to work some stuff out.
She also revolves around pot.
No. There's no pot going on there. No pot in our house. Not anymore. Sammy the Stem Cell's coming by. I feel a shark attack itching at the back of my hypothalamus. Is that what this is right here? Can you see my hypothalamus? Look at there's a
hypothalamus is in the middle of your brain somewhere.
Right. Look, I can open up this hole then. Is that it? Yeah, right? That's it, right?
Oh, man.
I'm going to close it back up.
I got bad news for you.
Let me close it up. Thanks. Yeah, what's the bad news?
You're going to lose like 5% of your childhood in a week.
Oh,
yeah.
I hope it's the bad parts.
Yeah.
I hope it's here's how I know that Misha and I have to resolve some stuff. I get an email. Hey, Mark, listening to your show, and I heard you say you were having rages. Dude, how long have you been off the aspartame? Now, this is someone after my own heart, all right? This is somebody who's made some connections along with me enjoying the show and said, how clear does it have to be, man? You're going through aspartame withdrawals. Dude, you are still detoxing. I swear. Go to Trader Joe's and get a box of Emergency and slam it in a juice squeeze, preferably Wildberry. Do this twice a day and stay away from dairy products and sugar. Trust me on this. This is where it gets good. My boyfriend is a total pot addict, and when he's jonesing, he's a real a-hole. And it's like Jekyll and Hyde. When he has, when he is nasty to me, I get even by being 100 times nastier to him. After about 3 hours, he cools down and acts like nothing has happened. Point is, I don't want to be around him. Hopefully, he has scored some spleef by then. Mark, I love your show. That's from somebody out there in Pasadena. I won't mention her name. But you know how we start off with the emergency, and then she tells a story about her pothead boyfriend? Yeah. That has nothing to do with emergency or anything else other than this guy clearly has a serious pot problem. And if he doesn't have his pot, he makes her miserable. I've been there, too. The weird thing I'm learning, though, without the drugs, is that this propensity to rage uncontrollably occasionally until I'm satisfied with the output of it, till I exhaust myself. I've had it for a long time, and I'm going to have Mishna on, and we're going to talk it through. Is that all right?
I have a Tempur-Pedic for that.
What does that mean, a Tempur-Pedic?
Tempur-Pedic mattress.
Yeah?
You can just hit into that thing so hard.
Is it a wall mount, or do you bang on it?
Bang on the mattress.
Oh, okay, so you're a banger.
Just slam your fist into it until you're, you know, dead tired.
But you're coming down on it, right?
Yeah.
See, like some cats are pullers and other cats are they pull up, some cats pull down. I punch vertical. Like, I'm not a banger on a mattress. Is there a wall mount?
Sure, you can stick a Tempur-Pedic mattress on the wall.
But
why not?
Does it
Who's going to stop you?
Does it come with a mount?
They're not going to stop me.
Yeah, bastards. But like, does it come with a mount though? Because I know that
no.
So now I have to attach something to mount it on the wall.
Get the guy who built your gate to do it.
I don't need a medieval looking wall mount for my Tempur-Pedic mattress. I just need something practical. That's an Ernie job. I'm not going to have a Peter come back and build some sort of weird chainmail hookup for my.
You already have some weird goth gate.
Yeah, it's a nice goth gate. Hey,
serpent of the tide pool, come through my gate.
Do you think that...
I am Mark Maron, wizard of Highland Park.
I'm in my... What do they call those things? I mean, oh, man. What are those things that you get up? A minaret. I'm building a minaret over my gate. Hey, do you think that my temper could have anything to do with this part of my brain? Take a look. Anything? You think that's it? Is that the problem?
That's going to have to come out.
All right, let's not do it now. Let me close it back up. So, look, folks, we're... this is great. A lot of things happened in the news today, and that's usually the setup for the jokes. Let me read this first. What is this? According to a new Harris Interactive poll, who cares what the hell the poll is? You know, you find the ones you like. This is a credible poll. This was in the Wall Street Journal. But it's just fun to kind of look at these numbers drop and drop. His approval rating in this poll is 29%. That's hilarious. 29%. He's in the 20s now.
According to the Jim Earl Friend poll.
Yeah, what's he at that?
He's like 5% now.
So, but
who are those five people? I don't know.
Yeah, so that's only five people you polled? Like, this is 1,000 poll. I could do I've got like, my MySpace friends are climbing.
Oh, man, how many do you have?
I got a guy named Zod. Really? I got that guy named Zod who wanted to be my friend.
I got to put mine up.
Yeah, a guy named Zod, and in his picture he's wearing a tinfoil hat. Zod's my buddy.
You know how I'm going to have more friends than you, though?
Huh.
I'm going to say that I'm pro-abortion and anti-abortion.
29% think Mr. Bush is doing an excellent, pretty good job. 29%. How do you like that? Excellent or pretty good job? Those people are morons. Even if you're going to approve of them, do you think President Bush is doing an excellent job? I do. He's doing an excellent job. That guy should be on another poll of retarded, delusional people. And they should include him on, hey, look, okay, here we go. A lot happened in the news today. Want to make sure you're not caught off guard and you're not uninformed. Here's edition one of Mark Maron Show Short Order News. As part of his new pay-per-view show to air later this month, O.J. Simpson pretends to sell a white Bronco at a used car lot, boasting that it made him famous. O.J. defends the stunt, saying it's meant to be a joke, admitting what really made him famous was severing his ex-wife's head, but they'd have no use for that at a used car lot. No use at all. The Senate gave final approval Thursday to a $70 billion election year package of tax cuts for investors and families with above-average income. Senate said Majority Leader Bill Frist, quote, rich people don't fight in wars. Why should we make them pay for them? End quote. The cartoonist who draws the Blondie comic strip is that still being published?
Oh, certainly.
The cartoonist who draws the Blondie comic strip is opening a restaurant chain to sell oversized sandwiches modeled after those eaten by Dagwood Bumstead. That's it. What's the guy's name? Yeah, Dean Young said he has been collecting sandwich recipes for over 20 years, which explains why he hasn't had time to gather any funny ideas for the strip. And that's the short order news for today. They still haven't found those guns. A lot of dirty business around those 200,000 AK-47s that disappeared out of Bosnia. 99-ton cargo package, four planes. Dirty dealings, weapons dealers. And this was weird because these are Russian guns. Guns have not come out of Bosnia in years. And the America, United States, was facilitating the selling of these guns for the Iraqi security forces. But somebody hijacked them, and they're probably going to be in the hands of the insurgents. This, of course, on George W. Bush's watch. We'll be back with Paul Rykoff to talk about the armed forces, the condition of the armed forces, his new book, what his organization is up to. Good guest, friend of mine.
Now, take a look at his election package, ladies. Mark Maron.
Vote for this, baby. Huh? Oh, that's what I'm saying. You know what I'm talking about. 100% real, too. Huh? Is it weird for me to wear this Speedo in here? I mean, does it make you uncomfortable at all?
No, not at all.
All right, look. Former infantry lieutenant in Iraq from 2003 to 2004, Paul Rykoff was the first Iraqi Iraq War veteran to speak out against the neocon death cult's mishandling of the planning and execution of this war. He founded Operation Truth, which has now morphed into Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. The group's mission statement is, quote, to ensure the enactment of policies that properly provide for our troops and veterans, keep our military strong, and guarantee our national security for the purpose of a stronger America. We uniquely empower Iraq and Afghanistan combat veterans to use their credibility and experiences to speak truth to power, shape public opinion, and place a priority on these issues, end quote. Paul Rykoff has written a book, people, about his journey, Chasing Ghosts, A Soldier's Fight for America from Baghdad to Washington. Nice to talk to you again, Paul Rykoff.
It's a real pleasure to be with you, Mark. Thanks a lot.
You bet, man. You must be running around like crazy. So before we talk about the book, it's been a while since I've talked to you. So why don't you fill me in on some of the issues and events that that the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is engaging in around the country?
Well, our growth has really been explosive since the last time we've talked, and we've got vets in all 50 states now, Puerto Rico, Guam, D.C., guys in Afghanistan, Iraq, places like Korea, and things are really moving forward strongly. We've really been working hard recently to bring visibility to homeless Iraq vets. We had a documentary called When I Came Home that premiered and won at Tribeca that told the story of a guy named Harold Noel. And when we met Harold, he was homeless living in Brooklyn, and we now know that there are 21 other homeless Iraq vets living in New York City tonight. And according to the VA, there are over 500 nationally. So this has become a big issue for us. We're still talking about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, the overextension in the military, and a lot of other issues facing vets coming home. But that's been a priority for us for the last week or so.
Yeah, and not to mention from other wars. I mean, there's a real homeless issue with the Vietnam vets. I mean, thousands and thousands, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's over 150,000, and they're all over the place. And the bottom line is we don't have to have history repeat itself. We don't have to make the same mistakes we made in Vietnam. And the numbers are small enough now that we can get ahead of the curve. But it starts with, you know, properly funding the VA, which is dangerously underfunded right now, close to $3 billion, you know, expanding transitional care, and getting this president to make veterans' issues a priority. You know, his recent State of the Union address, he didn't mention the word veterans once, and that's just unacceptable. So we're working to change that and try to make it a top-tier issue.
Yeah, he'll talk about the war, but he won't talk about the people fighting it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the people fighting it are part of that plan, and we need to show these guys in Washington that, you know, VA benefits and taking care of people when they come home is as important,
absolutely,
if not more important, than getting them the beans and bullets when they're over there.
Right.
So, you know, he hasn't served himself, and I know he doesn't understand it personally, but there are other guys on the Hill who do, and they've been stepping up. But we need everybody's help to try to force his hand and make these issues a priority so he can't pass the buck off to someone else down the road.
Excellent. Now, what do you know about this stuff I read about today, that this program at 14? Fort Sill, where they're these guys that are injured during boot camp and then punished for being injured. You guys doing anything about that?
You know, I just learned about it today, and we're still digging into it. But, you know, what it brings to light is the fact that they're having a real hard time recruiting right now, and we should be looking at the recruiting tactics around the country, obviously. But also, people need to understand that, you know, there is a recruiting shortage that's very, very pressing. National Guard missed by close to 20% last year, and this is after they lowered the standards. You can get in now without a GED, and if you're 40 years old, I don't know how old you are, Mark, but if you're 40 and you want a second job, the National Guard's hiring.
And the Army, I think, has lowered their standards to the point where they're slipping criminals in, they're fudging tests, they're helping guys pass urine tests.
Yep, they're desperate, man. They're really desperate, and they've had to crank it up, and they've doubled the number of recruiters. They've increased the financial incentives, and it's an indication of how desperate they are. But of course, you know, the president downplays the severity of the situation, just like he has with a lot of the other issues on the ground. And this goes beyond Iraq. This is going to, you know, impact our ability to defend our shores and respond to things like Katrina. So, you know, we really are, you know, eating our seed corn here when it comes to what we're doing in Iraq.
Well, what is the situation over there now? How are the guys being armed? How are they set up over there? Are they being, because I know there was a lot of momentum that you guys garnered up through, you know, raising the awareness of the lack of proper protection, both in vehicles and in uniforms. What's going on with that?
Well, we've come a long way, but, you know, going into the war, I had 38 guys in my platoon, and I write about this extensively in the book, and we didn't have body armor. We had the old stuff that wouldn't stop an AK round, and 40,000 other troops did not have adequate body armor going into Operation Iraqi Freedom 1. So, you know, our organization worked hard to try to make it a top visibility issue, and we made progress. Now everybody's got body armor. Some guys will even say they have too much, and it's slowing them down. Vehicle armor was a tremendous problem the first couple years of the war, but we've made progress there. We worked with Senator Dodd's office to pass what's called the Equipment Reimbursement Act. It actually paid troops back up to $1,500 for any money they paid out of pocket. So we're making progress, but, you know, the insurgency changes, and we've got to develop and change as well just so we can keep our guys alive.
Now, the book, Chasing Ghosts, A Soldier's Fight for America from Baghdad to Washington, outside of the journey that it carries you through when you're an activist and also in the line of fire there, how far back do you go in your life? Do you go to the beginning?
Yeah, I start with my ride over to Baghdad, and I was riding over as the invasion was going on, and, you know, the opening line of the book is George Bush had better be effing right, and
yeah.
I wanted people to know that, you know, I was thinking about the rationale for war on the way over there, and just going through my thought process of sitting on the plane and questioning the rationale for war, and I go back a little bit to the time I spent at Ground Zero in 9/11, and then try to show people how policy affects people on the ground. There have been a few books written about Iraq, but I wanted to show people how, you know, decision makers in Washington or guys like Paul Bremer who wear a suit, when they make a decision, it affects guys like me and my soldiers on the ground, Ramadi and Baghdad.
Let's talk about that, you know, one by one in terms of what some of those policies are and how they did affect you in just a second. We'll be back. Paul Rykoff is on the phone with us. Chasing Ghosts, A Soldier's Fight for America from Baghdad to Washington is the book. Stick around.
Now, place stamp here. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Welcome to the show. Go to markmaron.com to link to all our guests' wares and goods and bios and whatnot. Email us. Blog away with the people on the blog. The blog rads on the phone right now. Paul Rykoff, Executive Director and Founder of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans for America. The new book, Chasing Ghosts, A Soldier's Fight for America from Baghdad to Washington, out now. We're talking a little bit about the policymakers and the detachment that they have from the troops on the ground. You talk about that in your book, Paul. What are some of these policies that they have no idea what it puts the troops through?
Well, let me give you one example.
Okay.
In the summer of 2003, Bremer and the other geniuses who were behind many of the decisions early on in the war decided to disband the Iraqi army. So they decided to send a few thousand angry people onto the unemployment lines with guns. So what this meant for us was an immediate uptick in the violence. We started getting hit more often by mortar fire, more often by sniper fire, and it impacted our lives immediately. The flaws in planning, not enough troops on the ground. What that meant for us is there were so many jobs and so few people that we were often running around like chickens with our heads cut off. The analogy I like to use is, imagine if you were in Los Angeles or New York and you took three quarters of the police force off the streets tonight. The other quarter that you left behind would be completely overwhelmed and running around trying to do so many things with so few people that they wouldn't get much done. Those are the types of things we experienced on the ground. And when these guys in Washington screw up, guys like me on the ground bleed. And that's a big reason why I wrote this book, to help people understand how the two are connected.
Well, you know what I found interesting about one part of the book was how people respond to Iraqi vets coming home. I think that when you have a president that doesn't support the troops in the way that someone should, who respects what they're doing, who understands what they're going through, and makes the American people understand what they're going through, and makes the American people feel like the troops are supported, is that you get a population that really doesn't have any respect or knowledge of how to behave around soldiers returning. There's a part of the book where you visit L.A. and you go to a Lakers game, and you felt a little put off. Huh?
Yeah, well, it's really tough. When I came home, you know, a couple of my buddies and I went to L.A. to just try to relax, and the guys wanted to take me out for a good meal and to get some drinks. And you know, I came home, and Janet Jackson's exposed breast was the number one news item.
Right.
And even now, you know, things like Brad and Angelina and you know, David Blaine drowning himself dominate the headlines. And when you come home from Iraq, that's tough to swallow. And you know, so few people are personally affected by this war that it really impacts their ability to understand it. Less than 1% of the population has served in Iraq and Afghanistan. And World War II was close to 12%. So for most Americans in this country, it's not really an experience. It's just another issue. So, you know, it's another reason why I wrote the book, is to try to help people understand what it's like coming home. Because, you know, there are over 1 million folks coming home, and they're going to have some issues to deal with.
Yeah, I just want to correct something. We kind of were hoping that David Blaine would drown, but he didn't. He just, I hate to say that, but I think that guy is an idiot.
Yeah, well, you know, I wish he would have done it for, you know, to raise money for returning vets or something else.
Exactly. You know, yeah, just, you know, why should he deserve any sort of credit for holding his breath for a long time, you know, when people are out there really doing things? So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about this. What are your views and what is your organization's views on redeployment, withdrawal? Where are you guys at with that?
Well, we don't take a formal position on what, when or where to redeploy, but we definitely have been critical of this administration and trying to show people that stay the course is not working. And one of the main reasons why we haven't taken a formal position is because most of us don't think there's an easy one. We don't think there's a good one. There's a very limited discussion in this country, and people assume that you have to either be with George Bush and stay the course or be with Cindy Sheehan and bring them all home now. And I think that we need to start working toward third, fourth, fifth options that we can present to the American people that there's some kind of a compromise. We're never going to get a good solution, but we can come up with a few that are less bad, and that's what our organization really wants to see, is more of those ideas developed so we can have a real dialogue in this country and not just a false choice.
Now, I have to assume that, you know, dealing with so many veterans as you guys do in the organization, that is there a division on how they feel about the forces? Because it seems that the way that Rumsfeld and these idiots, these neocons, want to present the forces as just sort of a specialized job. And really the history and the legacy of the armed forces of this country is one of honor and connection to the country and a real sense of duty. How are the guys feeling in terms of how they see the forces?
Well, we're sick of hearing Rumsfeld talk on our behalf, that's for sure.
Uh-huh.
And we're sick of hearing politicians talk for us and use us for photo ops and political props. I mean, the guys coming home and girls coming home also have their own opinions and voices, and I don't think there's any, you know, unanimous opinion on any issue. They're kind of like the American people, but I've yet to find any soldier or Marine, anybody who served on the ground, who thinks we had enough troops to start with. General Shinseki said we needed several hundred thousand. Even now General Powell has come out and said that he asked for more troops, and Rumsfeld blew him off, so... You know, he can't run away from this. At some point, he's got to take accountability for the fact that he really screwed up the troop numbers on the ground from the outset, and we've been fighting uphill really ever since.
I don't get the feeling that these guys care. I think that they worked it into their bottom line, and they, on some level, the guys that had the broad vision for this ridiculous war, thinks that it's really going fine and that whatever you guys are complaining about is just a minor obstacle on the road to their vision being accomplished.
Well, you know, I don't even know what's going on inside their heads anymore,
yeah,
Mark, but
yeah.
It just boggles my mind why this guy Rumsfeld still has a job. I mean, you know, we have a very high level of accountability in the military.
Yeah.
And I was always taught that I was responsible for everything my unit and my subordinates did, but also everything they failed to do. We need the same level of accountability in government. Rumsfeld's
Absolutely.
Not running a McDonald's here.
Yeah.
He's running the Department of Defense. And if he screws up, I don't think he deserves a second or third chance. We've got so many smart people in this country that we should be able to find somebody better.
That's right. Now, how are you being received on the road? I know you do a lot of talking engagements. Now you're out there selling a book. You guys are reaching out to young people. You know, what have been your experiences and when you go to meet young people?
It's really been great, man. I just came back from North Carolina. I was down in Raleigh-Durham, and last month I was in North Dakota. I've been all over the place with the book tour now, and we also have a college tour. And you know, people are more and more receptive. We're critical of the war, but, you know, we're just like your neighbor down the street, and the veterans coming home are an important part of this dialogue. And the American public's really starting to come to us now, and I think that's a great thing. You know, nine Iraq veterans are running for Congress in the fall, and I think that's a great first step. And people always say, how can you support the troops? Well, send some of them to Congress, because we don't have a single person right now in the Senate or the House who served on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, you know, we hope our organization, the veterans around the country, and everybody can help support these people so we can change that this November.
Well, you know, most people think that this war has been handled badly. We're talking about three-quarters of the country about, and certainly raising awareness is the way to go. And it's always good talking to you, Paul Rykoff. Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, Mark. Thank you very much.
You bet, man. The book is Chasing Ghosts, A Soldier's Fight for America from Baghdad to Washington. The organization is Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. You can go to my site and click on those things, and it will take you there. We'll be back with the Trailer Park Boys.
Are you dying for a calm, reasoned discussion on the controversial issue of stem cell research? Too bad, because Sammy the Stem Cell is coming up next. Now, recently booted from American inventor Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
I'll tell you, man, this dumb president of ours, he's going to go on television on Monday. He's going to go on television on Monday and talk about immigration. And I realized something. I've been talking about this for a while here. There's a couple different angles on this, the progressive angle. There's a couple of those. If you come from the sort of critical of globalization, progressive angle in terms of dealing with immigrants, you put the responsibility on Mexico and on the United States and how their trade the agreements work and why they are forced out of their own country to come here to make a go of it, and why this problem is an international problem and a national problem on that level in terms of how people are dealt with because of these trade agreements. The other way, progressive idea, is that that if you take the jobs away, if you penalize the corporations and companies that are hiring these guys and make the jobs unavailable, that they will leave on their own volition. Their presence is lowering the minimum wage and making it's not so much that Americans don't want those jobs. They want them. They just want to be paid a reasonable wage to do it. Now, what's happening is that there's a schism within not only the progressive community about how to handle this, but a schism within the Republicans on how to handle this, because you've got extremists. You've got that Arapaio, that crazy sheriff in Arizona who takes things into his own hands and, you know, builds a tent city and makes an outdoor prison for people. Now he's got a little group of militias out there, you know, picking people up on the border. The Minutemen are down there. You've got some people in Congress wanting to build a wall or a fence. And then you've got these other Republicans who are trying to figure out a way to integrate them into the system. Now, George Bush is one of those, and it wasn't until today that I realized why he is one of those, is that obviously when you have 11 million illegal immigrants, many of them paying taxes, that means you have 11 million potential voters just among that group. And these are Latino votes. These are Hispanic votes. I'm not sure which one I'm supposed to say. And that's a lot of votes. And all the families that are connected to these people, that's even more votes. I mean, the Latino vote is going to be a huge political chunk of it's a huge demographic. So that's big political real estate. So now George Bush is going to get on the TV in prime time on Monday. Prime time. He's buying ad space, buying space now. I don't know if they have to buy space, but he's guaranteeing space. And he is going to get on the TV and present an idea about immigration. And he's going to talk about integrating these people into the workforce over a period of time. And he is going to make it seem, this is my speculation, he's going to make it seem like he's freeing the slaves, people. He's going to make it seem like he has done the greatest thing in the world for the Latino people of this country. He is going to do everything he can to guarantee that these Latinos vote Republican. Now, this kind of crap didn't work with this kind of tactic didn't work with the black vote, although he's paying off the Republican Party through faith-based initiatives is paying off black preachers to move their flocks under the tent of the Republicans. But this is a different situation. And it seems to me what's happening is they're trying to figure out what is worth more. Who do we hold on to? Who do the Republicans have the most invested in? Working Americans that are going to be pissed off at immigrants, or do we invest in the millions and millions of new Latino votes that will be with us for generations if we make them feel like we freed the slaves? That's the big thing, I think.
Wasn't it the Hispanic vote that pushed them over the top in 2004? That helped.
Yeah. They already, and this, I think, depending on where the Hispanic population is around this issue, and I imagine just by extended families, many of them are pro immigration, are pro make these illegals legals, and give them a facilitate a process.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's interesting that, and as I've talked about before, that he's enabling any Republican who is running in a district that is particularly racist or frightened or jingoistic or paranoid about Mexicans, they can distance themselves from the president on this. There are two views in the Republicans, and these are going to be used in local elections, but I think the president is more concerned with the overarching the Republican Party in the future. And I think that he's going to try and guarantee that Latino vote for generations to come by doing something monumental. This is just speculation. I'm no genius political analyst. But on another front, now to help us sort out some of the latest developments and issues surrounding stem cell research, please welcome a very controversial guest, Sammy the Stem Cell. Hello, Sammy.
Hello, Mark.
All right, okay. And
bless you.
Thank you. Now, before we begin, Sammy, you must be reeling from all the recent news. UC San Francisco is getting a $60 million grant for a stem cell research building. The Democratic candidate for governor of Massachusetts wants to invest $1 billion in stem cell research. And the governor of Illinois just won a major court battle in favor of stem cell research.
Uh-huh.
Well,
I'm at peace with it, Mark. I embrace stem cell research. I give of my body to all mankind.
What are you talking about, Sammy? I mean, remember when you used to come on my show and scream and rant that you were a complete integrated being because Tom DeLay said so?
Uh-huh. And then I tell you to f*** off?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not that person anymore, Mark.
And remember when he told me I was too old to be dressing like a skate punk?
Yeah, and that your Indian name was probably Losack?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that you must have been bathing in Ed Begley's best cleaner because your toupee smelled like squirrel poop?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And remember the time I called you a yammering yenta?
Yeah.
And a bloated sad sack?
Uh-huh.
A burger-assed fat body?
Yeah.
Fuzz-faced munch? A flute-headed sass monkey?
All right, get to the point.
Okay, the point is, that's not me, man. I'm a new person. I've changed. Oh, and I also called you a stink-pitted Shylock.
All right, okay, never mind that. What do you mean you've changed?
I know who I am now, Mark. For I am your savior, Jesus Christ, Son of God, who will sacrifice his life to cleanse the world of its sins. Mark, just a heads up, after dinner, one of you will betray me.
Okay, all right, look, we're not having dinner, and I'm the only other person in the room right now, all right?
Pray to me, Judas, I am Christ.
Oh, man, this is bogus. I mean, you're not really into all this. I mean, it's just one of your weird phases, right? I mean, it's like the time you were into Scientology, or how about that time you were a follower of Manson? Remember that? Or you remember the time you wanted to grow up to be Hitler? Remember
Pray that? With me, Mark, and I will let you have sex with one of my followers.
Okay, so I assume you're talking about Mary Magdalene, all right? First of all, that's offensive to me.
Well, wait, who mentioned her? I'm talking about Lazarus. Talk about raised from the dead. Man, that guy can get it up in a blizzard of frogs. Come on, man. I want to see you two guys go at it.
Oh, wait. This is absurd. I will not have sex with a fictional Bible character.
Why not? You have sex with a fictitious wife.
She's not fictitious. She's real, Sammy.
By the way, I did your fictitious wife.
You're disgusting.
Yeah, and you're blessed, my son. Now pray to me.
All right, look, you know what? You're scaring me again. All right, why don't you just leave?
Okay, man, whatever. As far as I'm concerned, you're excommunicated from my f***ing church.
All right, you know what? Get out now.
You f***! See if I pray to your stupid ass. You f***! See if I pray. Hey.
Hey, f- you, you stupid asshole.
See if I pray for your stupid ass. And
f- you, man.
No,
f- you.
No, right back at you, Mets. You know what? And the horse you really rode it on.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just getting me all flustered. I can't believe this.
All right, you bastard. Why don't you just get the hell out of my studio? I'm sick of it. All right? I'm just sick of everything you stand for.
Oh, I hate you so much that I'm going to plot.
All right. Bye, Sammy.
Oh, f*** off.
Well, that was interesting. You know, it kind of digressed there, but I'm a little concerned. I'm a little concerned, Jim, about Sammy the Stem Cell.
Well, you know, he tried to change for you, and you know.
You can't change for people. You cannot change for people.
What is this, more your 12-step talk? You know, maybe you can change for somebody. That's what Jesus is all about, changing for Jesus, isn't it?
Well, shouldn't you change for yourself, though? This is an issue. This is the problem, man.
No, there's too much selfishness.
I got to get my wife in here. When she comes in a little while, be nice, and we're going to talk about it, because I had another outburst last night.
Another one last night?
Yeah.
About what? You don't want to mention it until she gets here, huh?
No, what happens is I get frustrated about something else that has nothing to do with her. And I get excited. So it's not unusual for me to talk in terms of like, no, you don't understand. What I'm trying to say to you is that I feel this way. That doesn't mean I'm mad at her.
No, not at all.
But it still means I'm yelling.
But maybe she's not being sensitive to you and listening to you enough. Maybe you feel that.
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty good angle. Honestly, sometimes I feel like she's manipulating me a little bit. Like she's putting on a little show to get me to go along with her way.
Well, she is a woman, Mark.
Yeah, but I don't generalize like that. Is that kind of crazy? Is that stuff true? Is that true?
No.
Those kind of things?
But, I mean, no.
I don't want to say that she's doing that because she's a woman. She's got this woman problem and this woman genetic way that she's genetically propelled to behave a certain way, other than on a reproductive level or perhaps, wear a certain type of clothing. But I don't want to say that her behavior is a certain way. Should I? What are you saying, Jim?
Does she walk around the house in a certain manner at times?
Yeah, she walks like a woman.
You see?
Yeah, maybe you're right now that you mention that. She does. So, look, we're going to have the Trailer Park Boys here in just a few minutes, if that's okay with you, Jim. Is that all right?
Hey, you know, I approve.
It's a very funny show. It's Canadian, and they don't let Canadian shows down here until way after the fact. I hope that eventually that we get to see it. I know there's 5 seasons out on DVD. They're making a movie about it, but they're making a movie based on the Trailer Park Boys. But can we get it on American television? No. And why? Because there's a prejudice in this country against Canadians who cuss. All right? They'll let Canadians who don't cuss in and be on television, but if they're cussing Canadians, then they don't.
Oh, it's a cussing show?
There's a bit of that, and it's good. I'm a big proponent, is that the word, of blue comedy. I like all things blue. I think that cussing is good. I once had a conversation with Terry Gross about blue comedy. She took the high road, of course. Terry Gross on NPR.
Fresh air.
Yeah, she took the high road in saying that, basically trying to minimize in an arrogant way that that blue comedy, for some reason, could not be as intelligent as highbrow comedy, which I think is total crap. And she can go f*** herself.
Right,
yes. You know,
a lot of editing this
show. How do you like that?
I appreciate that. But I know you're making fun of that, but you're making the point that expression should not be limited.
Sometimes, here's what I'm saying to you. Sometimes you just got to, you have to punctuate with a fuck.
Absolutely. It's real life.
Yeah. That's what I mean, sometimes I'll just fucking say it to fucking punctuate.
Fresh air ain't real life. You know what? There's got to be smog.
Yeah. Look at Bill. He's like, that's going to cost me a bit. It's going to take me about an hour to fix this show. I'll be back with the Trailer Park Boys.
And now his sleep setting is 73. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. This is where we got Canadians in the studio. That's good, though. It's good. You know, I should have assumed that trailer park culture was not specifically American phenomenon. And there's a documentary process going on in Canada that revolves around the Sunnyvale Trailer Park in Nova Scotia, which I know nothing about, but the people that live there have become a great interest and fascination of the Canadian people in the show The Trailer Park Boys. From that show, from the Sunnyvale Trailer Park, in Nova Scotia. We have Bubbles and J-Rock in the studio. Welcome, fellas.
Hey, what's cracking? Thanks for having us.
Not much. So let me ask you a few questions, because I don't know anything about where you're from. What is Halifax and where is Nova Scotia? Are they different? Is Halifax a place in Nova Scotia?
Bubbles, you were good at geography. You want to tackle that one?
Yeah, Halifax is the capital city of Nova Scotia, right on the east coast there on the water.
Yeah. So in terms of how is you, have you spent a lot of time in America at all?
Well, I mean, we've been down here doing different things. They bring us down to, you know, talk about stuff like this on the radio, but
so is there any comparison you can make to like Halifax into like what would it be like comparable to here in the US, so I can get some sort of idea?
You mean in terms of size? Nova Scotia is the province that Halifax is in on the east coast.
Okay, all
and
right.
Nova Scotia is kind of shaped like a lobster, you know what I'm saying? And Halifax is kind of where the lobster's butt would be, you know what I'm saying? If the lobster had a butt.
Yeah, okay. Now, I got a good picture of it. But, like, is it like Alabama or Mississippi? Is it like New Mexico or Oregon?
You talking about, like, culturally?
Size? Yeah, like culturally. Like, because I'm thinking that, like, are people, what are the people like up there? Are they?
I think it'd be more like Maine or Boston or places like that.
Oh, sophisticated? So, like, you have a lot of colleges up where you are around the...
Yes, we do, actually.
Community colleges, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like Massachusetts, but more unemployment, you know what I mean? Alcoholism.
Sure.
But it's a celebration and a way of life, you know what I'm saying, as opposed to some downside to
it. Right, so it's not like a sickness or a negative thing.
No,
it's a celebration.
It's a lifestyle choice, you know what I mean?
Well, I've watched you guys. I've seen the show, and it seems that a lot of what goes on the show revolves around growing pot. Now, what are your friends' names again?
Ricky and Julian.
Right, so they it's constantly about growing a hydroponic pot. Isn't that the big thrust of what you guys revolve around?
That's what Ricky's been doing since he was probably about six.
Yeah.
He started growing it when he was six, and, you know, he's keeping at it.
And how's that business going for him?
Well, good advice for life, you know what I'm saying, is if you're going to do one thing, you do it right.
You focus.
And after a lot of trial and error, you know what I'm saying, or as Ricky would say, denial and error, you know what I'm saying, after a while you start to learn how it works, and he's good at it.
Yeah.
That's an entrepreneurial spirit.
He does grow a nice plant.
Yeah. And is it true, I read in some of the materials that you were brought up by cats, Bubbles, is that?
No, I wasn't brought up by them. I look after anywhere between, you know, 50 to 120 kitties.
Really?
Depending on how many nomadic ones are around at any point.
I have four, and three of them were feral, and they live with me now. Do you have that problem where you wake up and you're always like going, where's the pee?
Well, no, I mean, I know how to train them where they won't pee on me.
They don't pee on you at all?
No, they don't pee on me. They don't pee. I live in a shed. They don't pee in there. They pee outside.
Yeah. They don't pee on your clothes or anything? Mine likes to pee in suitcases and bags when I'm about to go on vacation.
Oh,
none
no.
of that?
No.
Well, good for you.
I met some ladies in my time, you know what I'm saying, who like to do that too. I think that's a sign of affection.
When women pee on your luggage?
On your luggage. It's just their way of saying, you know what I'm saying, don't go.
Wow, that's a...
I feel like you're going to leave me.
You hang out with some interesting women.
Peed on your luggage one time, J-Rock.
And I thank you for that.
That's a sign of affection.
There's no kind of gift.
Oh, it wasn't a sign of affection. I was wasted, and I thought I was in the toilet, and I pissed all over the suitcase.
Well, it's my fault, you know what I'm saying, because I live in a small place, and I was storing my luggage in the bathroom, so it was an easy mistake.
Yeah, so that's nice that you guys are friendly enough to let something like that go, because I think I would have been pissed, man. So what is your aspirations? What do you do for work on there?
Well, you know what I'm saying? When you say work, technically, you know what I'm saying, that would suggest a job where I get paid for it, and I don't technically have a job. You know what I mean? Where I got paid for it, but I'm an MC, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A rap artist.
Yeah, sure. And now, who are some of your influences?
Oh, you know what I'm saying? It's, you know, I'm just as much their influences as they are mine. You know, Snoop.
Uh-huh, sure.
Eminem, I'm down with him, but he's white, you know what I mean? But he's still aight.
Yeah.
Dre is tight.
Sure. I know what you're saying, but you are white as well.
Well, that's a state of mind too. You know what I mean? I'm black in my heart.
Can we hear some of your work?
Sure. You know what I'm saying, Bubbles? Can you give me a beat?
Jesus, I can try, J Rock. You know I'm not very good at the beats.
You can throw down a beat, B. You aight? That beat's tight. I'm feeling it. How many times have you sat out on the deck, getting wrecked, and waiting to collect a check? Knowing that's as good as life is ever gonna get. Knowing when you're from the park, it's in your blood, it's in your sweat. Debts and doubts and bets and bouts of insanity. Is it society, or is it just vanity that makes me plan to be the man that I plan to be? Instead, I can't see the forest right in front of me. For the trees, it's a social disease, and all them other MCs are on my back like fleas. Please, J to the ROC, it's so hard, ain't nobody getting royalties from me. Help my goodness, they're gonna come get me. I'll steal a whole album worth of samples, cause they'll let me. Cole stole a diamond ring to make my girl my wife. Wife, that's Trailer Park Life.
Excellent.
That was great.
That was J-Rock and Bubbles from the Trailer Park Boys right here in the studio.
That was tight, J-Rock.
Who's Conky?
Conky's a little friend of mine I used to have until Julian blew his head off. He was just like a little ventriloquist puppet that I used to play with, but Recky didn't like it because, you know, I couldn't exactly control everything Conky said all the time. And he'd start yapping at Recky, and eventually Julian shot him.
Did he have a separate voice? Did you do a whole thing with the puppet? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really believe that it was me making Conky go, but
yeah,
I kind of did have a different voice for him, I suppose.
Yeah? What was that like?
I can't remember.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I didn't want to pressure you. Now, your hip-hop career, dude, I mean, have you recorded at all, or?
You know what I'm saying? I've recorded a little bit. I'm just laying down some tracks in my trailer right now, you know what I'm saying, to try to get an album together, because there's been a lot of pressure from people, you know what I'm saying, all over the trailer park.
Sure.
Waiting for my record, you know what I'm saying? Waiting for it to drop. And people all over the Dartmouth, Halifax area, too. Not all kinds of people, but like a dozen or so people have been waiting for it.
Okay.
So I'm trying to get it done.
So now, I didn't realize that the show that that you guys are part of, this Trailer Park Boys show, wasn't available here in the States for the longest time. Why do you think that is? How come we're shutting out the Canadians, man?
I heard you talking about cussing, you know what I'm saying? And I thought cussing cousins, I thought that was a term. And yeah. I thought we were your cussing cousins from the North.
Oh,
but we weren't really embraced, you know what I'm saying, by you people.
Well, I just think, is it a language issue? Is it all the pot growth? I just don't understand why I don't see more of the Trailer Park Boys on American TV. I know you're on the BBC, you know, but that's not really, it doesn't count as Americans.
No.
Do you guys like Americans up there?
Well, you know what I'm saying, being on the BBC, it was like we had to be smuggled into your country on the above ground railroad, you know what I'm saying, from the British people. How come they're allowed in here?
Yeah, exactly.
That don't seem right.
Isn't there a lot of fishing up in Halifax? Am I thinking of the right place?
Yeah, there's a lot of fishing goes on up there.
Because I think I've met people from up there once or twice before, and there's like, it's almost like Appalachia. There's like hillbillies and stuff. Is there hillbillies?
I'm sure if you look for one, you'd find one.
I'm sure if you look for people who weren't, you might have trouble.
Tell me about this movie, though, that you guys are working on.
There were some, all we know is that there were some bigger than usual cameras following us around for a couple months last summer, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And apparently, it's going to come out down here.
All right.
Right, Bubbles?
That's what they're telling me. I mean, normally when we make the TV show, they're just there with the little cameras, you know, and this time they had big fancy ones, and it was a pain in the ass because normally they just film you doing something, but now if they miss it, they get you to do it again, you know?
Yeah, but don't they bring food? Usually they bring food.
Well, yeah, they had nice, lovely sandwich trays.
That's good.
Which I enjoyed.
Yeah, food's good. Free food's good. That must have been worth it.
And this was a weird thing, you know what I'm saying? With the bigger cameras around doing the movie, even if they gave us soup, they still called it subs. They got some weird language in the film world, you know what I mean?
So they just kept saying, your subs are ready?
You want some subs? And we're like, but that's soup.
That's soup.
Subs, though, you know what I'm saying?
That's weird, man. Maybe they're just generalizing. Maybe that's just a different word for all food.
Must be weird movie people.
Yeah, movie people are weird, and you're surrounded by them down here. I guess I ought to warn you. I don't know how long you've been in L.A., but they're all over the place. We've got a big fan of you guys on the phone, and she's going to ask you some questions in just a minute. Can you hang out, or you got pressing issues?
I think it's safe to say we got nowhere to go, Doug.
Okay, man. We'll be back with Bubbles and J-Rock.
And now he's stealing your identities. Mark Maron.
I am. We're in the studio now. with a couple of members, or they are residents of the Sunnyvale Trailer Park in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I feel like such a retarded idiot for not knowing more about my geography, about my Canadian geography. But
Halifax, isn't that where the survivors of the Titanic are buried in Nova Scotia?
Yeah. Technically, the survivors weren't buried, dog, because they're still living.
Oh, man, you're right. You
know what I'm saying?
He called you on that, man.
Good one, Jay. Right?
He's thinking, man.
The people who didn't survive.
The people who died.
Yes, that's true. Actually, they're all there in the cemetery.
In Halifax?
Yes, sir, Bob.
Have you ever gone over there just to see the dead Titanic people?
Yeah, I've been over to see them.
Oh, that's nice. So now, it's my understanding that, Bubbles, you fix shopping carts?
Yes, I do, actually. I find them down over the banks or on train tracks or haul them out of lakes and just take them home, fix them, shine them up, and sell them back at the grocery store.
That's amazing. You know, when I was in high school, we used to get shopping carts and put them in front of our cars and get them going really fast and let them run into things.
Yeah, you can do that with them, too. I encourage it.
It'll help you
out. I can go get them and fix them and sell them back, $18 a pop.
All right, well, that's a reach out to all you teenage, bored teenage kids. You're helping somebody out if you go destroy public property.
Preferably the 2100 series with the titanium bearings.
There you go. On the phone right now, a big fan of the Trailer Park Boys, Janice, is calling, and she's got some questions. Janice, are you there?
Hello.
Hi. Yeah, how you doing?
Here.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Well, you won our contest as a Trailer Park Boy fan of the year here on the Mark Maron Show, and you're entitled to a few questions. Have at it. We got Bubbles and J-Rock here.
I'm very excited.
My God, she sounds sexy.
I'm excited, too, after hearing your voice, girl.
Well, this first question is for you, J-Rock.
Yeah, go ahead, baby.
Well, I wanted to know when you made... See Russia with the Love Bone.
Oh, my adult film.
Yeah. What did the ladies, the stars, have to do to get cast for that movie?
There was a lengthy audition process, you know what I'm saying? Because I was all about casting just the right ladies for those particular parts.
This was a porn film you did?
An adult film, you know what I'm saying?
Porn?
Adult film is a classier term that folks in the industry tend to refer to.
Right, okay.
Did you do dirty stuff with all the...
Well, I don't call it dirty, you know what I'm saying? But suffice it to say, I looked at 300 to 350 women to make sure that I cast the right ladies in these ports.
Yeah.
Because there was a heavy load in terms of acting, you know what I'm saying, that they had to carry.
Yeah, sure, I understand. In the adult film, they had to carry a heavy load.
Yeah.
I get it. So how many women were in the film with you?
What would you say, Bubbles?
Well, I was in the movie. J-Rock directed it.
Oh, you were in it too?
Yeah, I played, what was his name? Corporal Alexia. Russian policeman.
Uh-huh. Did you guys do a threesome?
Amazing.
Oh. Did you hear Janice?
Well, I didn't get to do any dirty stuff with her because our trailer park supervisor, Mr. Leahy, came and broke it up right before I got to get my freak on.
But Janice, you know what I'm saying? We're casting a new film called Mexic Hoes. And you know what I'm saying? I wouldn't mind if you auditioned for that sometime, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've been to Mexico.
Well, that's very pivotal to the role, if you're a method actor.
I have another question. I wanted to know, I know that gang life is pretty tough in the trailer park, and what how you cope with that in the trailer hood, and, you know, people like Cyrus, undesirables like him, and, you know, if you could comment on that.
I could comment on it, you know what I'm saying? And when you're in the trailer park, you know what I'm saying, fortunately, I carry enough confidence, you know what I'm saying, around me that there's like an invisible force field where people stay 50 to 75 feet away from me. They know that I'm packing. Plus, they respect me as a rap MC, so ain't nobody going to take me out, you know what I'm saying? So if they do, I cut them down with my rhymes, you know what I'm saying? Hugs, not drugs. Staying cool with school, kids. Peace.
Got it.
Go ahead, Jan. Sorry.
Oh, this one's for you, Bubbles.
Yeah?
I know that you have... Bubbles, you have a lot of kitties that probably keep you company, but don't you get lonely, sort of, you know, alone in the shed?
Well, yeah, I mean, who wouldn't, but, you know, I hang out with my kitties in there and trying to get a girlfriend, a lady friend to, you know, join me some night, so if you're up around that way and you just want to watch some DVDs or whatever.
There you go, Janet.
You know?
Wow. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
That answers my question.
You got any more or are you good?
I think I'm good.
Thanks for calling, Janice. You guys want to say anything before she hangs up?
Janice, I think you're good. I would like to agree. You sound real good.
Yeah, she's got a sexy voice on her.
Well, maybe we'll hook you up with her email address after the show.
Tight.
All right. So, all right, fellas. Now, what's going on with the availability of people in this country to get your stuff? You got 5 seasons of this thing? What's that?
I got one of these phones they gave me.
You want to answer it?
No, but look, it doesn't even have a cord going into it.
That's crazy.
It's just a phone. It's just a phone with no wires hooked to it, and you can use it anywhere in the world, apparently.
It's so amazing how technology is just running away with everything, huh?
I know.
It's a cell phone.
Did somebody lend it to you or what?
They gave it to me. The publicity lady gave it to me just to have so she could keep track of me.
I don't know if that's a cell phone or a stole phone, if you know what I'm saying.
I don't know what it is, but it
wasn't no selling involved in that phone the way you got it.
Someone just gave it to him to make sure that he doesn't get lost, I think is what the deal is, yeah. So how can, when's this movie coming out? You know anything about it with the big cameras?
Sounds like it might be August or September, you know what I'm saying? There's a hustler down here named Ivan Reitman.
Ivan Reitman is a director who's a Canadian, I think.
Yeah, he is Canadian.
Yeah.
He's a cousin.
Right, a cousin from the north.
And he did a bunch of movies I enjoyed.
Yeah, he did. What did he do? Ghostbusters.
Animal House.
Did he do Animal House?
He did Animal House. Stripes.
So.
Yes, he did.
John Landis.
Euro Trip.
He did. And that new one, Dave. Didn't he do Dave with Kevin Kline about the two presidents? Wasn't that Ivan Reitman?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He did that one.
Yeah. I don't think he did Animal House, though.
He did something to it.
His son just made a movie called Thank You for Smoking.
Yeah, it was tight.
You do like that one?
Yeah, it was tight.
It was cool, right? Pretty funny. Well, thanks, fellas. J-Rock and Bubbles, The Trailer Park Boys, 5 seasons available on DVD. Movie forthcoming in August by Ivan Reitman, who did something to Animal House. So hang out. Mishnah Wolf, the comedian and wife of mine, is going to come and try to fix our relationship. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now stop blocking my driveway, you rude sons of bitches. I've been patient too long. Mark Maron.
That's a good Malloy impression. Sons of bitches. Truth seekers.
Sons of bitches?
You sons of bitches. Stay out of my driveway. You truth seekers are welcome to come around back if you want.
Malloy does that?
Yeah, let me read this email. I got an email from Ted in Nebraska. Hi, Mark. Once again, the Democrats are totally wrong about Iran. You limousine liberals seem to think there's no threat at all. Oh, no, it's happening. It's happening. Oh, God.
And now, from Radio Halliburton, it's America's favorite late-night far-right radio show, Shark and Awe, with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good evening, neocons. Radio Halliburton, where the truth hurts.
Hey, we've been so busy kicking Iraq's ass, we forgot to kick Iran's ass. Well, bring it on, Iran, because Mark the Shark is locked and loaded. Oops, wrong button. That's better. Did you see that 18-page letter that President Imadina Jerkoff sent to President Bush?
Boring!
He said Jesus wouldn't approve of our methods. Well, let me tell you something. Jesus has got our back, buddy. Not yours, you camel sand hostage towel boy sand. Hey, wait, you know what? Let me put it away. You can understand. Hey, if I had told you once, I had told you 1,000 times. Get it? I had told you? Get it? Hey, Mark the Shark's got a letter for you, tough guy. Dear Mahmoud, love Mark the Shark. Oh, and P.S. Hey, let's read some shark email. Here's one from Reggie in Pacoima. Hey, Mark the Shark, what's up with Hillary Clinton? She's been sucking up to Rupert Murdoch and even said nice things about Bush. Does she want to be president of my ass? Hey, good question, Reggie. Here's a message for you, Hillary. Don't bother sucking up to our side because we pick the teams, understand? And everybody knows you're on the other team. Get it? She's a lesbian. Other team, she likes girls. Get it?
Hi, I'm Hillary Clinton. I'd do anything to become president. I'll flip-flop, flip-flop, flip-flop. Then when I take office, I'll force everyone to be a big, swishy homo. Then I'll inseminate every lesbian just so she can experience a partial birth abortion.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Oh, man. What happened? How come I'm on the floor?
Mark, are you all right, Mark?
What happened, man? How come no one helps me when that happens? I wake up on the floor. What's my wife doing here? Did you guys call my wife because there was some sort of trouble? Why did you call the hospital?
No, she was supposed to be here, remember? She was supposed to be here, like, you know. 15.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Hey, baby. What's going on, Mishna
Not
Wolf?
Not much. I got to say, I like the Mark the Shark music.
Hey, rock and roll. Like, can you name that Mark the Shark music?
You know what?
Isn't it Metallica, Bill? Isn't it Metallica? Who knows? Who is it? Megadeth. It's a Megadeth tune.
I can't believe I don't know that one.
Well, it's just a little snippet. You might not have been hip to it. So, you know, we're here to hash some stuff out.
You and I?
I've been telling the listeners, as you know, you got offended the other night when we were listening to the Mark Maron show.
Yes.
As we call it around the house. I like to say, honey, what are we listening to?
The Mark Maron show.
Wow, man, she sounded so scared and frightened when she answered there. Why is that?
Because I terrorize her. I terrorize her. Well, here's what we were talking about yesterday. And I'm going to admit it. I don't know how this is going to go, but like I think we need to talk about my anger problem. No chewing gum on the microphone. See, now look what just happened. I just talked to her like a child. What the hell is that? Wait, let me try. Let me rephrase that. Hey, baby, could you please? We're on the mic. Oh, is that nicotine gum?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You can chew it if you have to.
I don't have to. I can put it between my teeth and gum.
All right. First of all, let's try and do. All right, y'all packed in. You got your stuff in there.
Yeah, it's like school.
Now, Jim, let's ask you. Now, here's what happened the other night. Uh-huh. I get home after she's been away a week. I talked about this on the air, mm-hmm. and I'm very happy she's going to be home. And then all of a sudden, she starts talking about us getting a new house.
Right, right.
And I, you know,
you made me sound really bougie in your depiction of me.
Wait. We're not talking about your problem with how I depicted you on the radio. We're talking about, like, I blew up because I thought that, you know, we were happy with our house and you were talking about getting a new house. I didn't mean to. You're not bougie.
No, but, I'm not bougie. Anyone, I mean.
So here's my question. Did I have a right to be angry?
What's the question? Did you have a right to be angry or did you have a right to yell at me?
Did I have a right to be angry and then yell? I wasn't yelling at you. Maybe I was just yelling.
It was a lot of yelling, though.
Yeah, okay. So now, do you yell, Jim? Let's be honest. Let's be candid here. We're trying to work some stuff out.
Sometimes my voice is raised, but I only yell when I'm yelling about something else at somebody else.
So, okay, that's good. I've used that one. See,
but, you know, I can't yell at Heather and get away with it.
Yeah, but I think a lot of women yell, too. I just feel like once we start yelling, we're not really having a conversation anymore, then, are we?
Well, let me ask you a question. Is this yelling? Is this yelling at you? When the hell are we going to go to the airport? Am I yelling at you or am I just yelling?
No,
you understand?
That's not yelling at me.
Now, how about this? You said you were going to be here at 4, and you walk in at 4:15, like we, you know, like we're not in a hurry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I answer that for both of you?
Yeah.
The first question, I sense problems here with both of you here.
Yeah.
Because that one A was yelling.
Yeah.
And Mishna didn't sense that.
Yeah.
Which is her problem.
Uh huh.
And your problem as well. Two. The second one was yelling as well. These were our definite raised voice decibels that are happening here.
Now, let's get back to you. See, what happens to me and the reason that we're having trouble.
See, that's yelling if you're a wuss. But, I mean, this wife can take it. A longer duration at a higher decibel is what I'm talking about.
All right, so now
it's all that heavy metal stuff you've been listening to.
I mean, I can take some anger.
Yeah.
You know, I understand people get angry.
Yeah.
You know, and it's good not to let your feelings clog up and stuff like that. It's bad for you. Give you cancer.
Right, but?
But I'm also not an anger dumpster for people to just put their anger into.
Okay, now we're getting somewhere. So because my yelling, it makes you feel like an anger dumpster.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. And when I'm yelling...
And it's also like if you're upset about something, a conversation ends when you start yelling, because...
That's something I don't understand. Do you understand that? For me, when I'm yelling, that's the beginning of the conversation. That means we're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
That, like,
well,
I am getting it out. Here's the conversation. It's happening at this level, and we're talking about it.
Mark, what I want you to do now is tell Mishna what she just told you.
She said that when the yelling starts, the conversation ends.
Wrong! What she just told you was this.
What?
Mark, I'm crying out for help. Help me, Mark.
That's not what I get. I get Mark...
Oh, I'm sorry. That's me. I'm saying that. Man. I really screwed up.
Here's what I get. I get, Mark, you need help. And my basic premise, the whole...
How did this become about you? That's amazing.
I am the yeller. I'm the yeller, right?
Right.
So what I'm saying is that in order for me to yell, and for it to, and I'll admit that I've been doing this for years, and I got to go to anger management, and I'm saying that in front of God and everybody, a God I don't believe in, and everybody who listens to my show, that I'm going to anger management to help solve this problem because I love you, and I don't want to go through whatever the hell we went through again last night. I don't want to go through it.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
What?
This is how I justify
it. No, you're supposed
to
say thank you, and that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Thank you. I'm so happy you would be willing.
See, you don't appreciate anything that I do.
See, I like it when you get good and angry at people who deserve your anger.
Yeah?
Yeah, like...
Why are you putting on this weird little girl voice? You never talk like this.
I'm just saying that...
There you go.
I'm going to enunciate.
What?
There is good anger.
Okay.
You know?
Right.
Like, you can be angry at people that oppress the working class of America.
Right.
Like, I like that anger.
Yeah, Jim does too. He's angry about that, too.
I enjoy that anger very much.
Right. Okay.
And I like you to be angry at people that, you know, exploit those less fortunate than them.
Yeah.
Or the sick.
Yeah.
Or the elderly.
You want me to be angry at the sick and the elderly?
No.
Oh, at the people that exploit them.
Bad people.
Okay, but not you.
Yeah, I mean...
Because you're good, you're perfect, right?
So I think it's just about directing your anger...
Answer the question. Are you good and perfect?
No.
Okay, good. All right, so I just want to make sure that both of us are at fault in this. All right, go ahead. Direct my anger where?
Upward. Instead of downward.
Upward.
Now, Andy, do you guys have problems? You're married, and you know what it's like to be married, and that sometimes, you know, you're with somebody you love, and all of a sudden, they're you want to yell and scream.
Right.
And how do you guys handle it?
I yell pretty loud. Or no, sometimes, you know, they say you're yelling, but you're not really yelling.
Exactly. It's a volume problem. I think it's a genetic issue that women have around volume.
Well, it's a tonal problem.
Tone.
So you think my hearing's too sensitive? Is that...
Yeah, I think that might have something to do with it. Like, is this yelling? Am I yelling now?
Yeah.
Jim, what are you, a girl?
You have a natural tendency to raise your voice higher than anyone else I've ever known in my entire life.
I yelled at Jim once. It was bad.
Once? But, I mean, once more than all the other times. But, yeah, okay.
Jim, do you want to get in on this action, too? Because I can mediate for you and Mark.
My dumpster is full.
Wait.
My dumpster is full. I'm waiting for the L.A. Department of Water and Power to come pick up my dumpster.
I'm going to own up to a couple things, because I'm not sure if this is going anywhere, but I think that just my being honest about it is helping. Here's my Jim, we've been in a parking structure at the Grove, okay, having a conversation. This is how I know you're both right. Having a conversation, and the security guard came up and asked, is everything okay? That doesn't happen if you're just having a regular conversation, okay?
How do you remember a conversation? Because I don't remember that being a conversation.
What do you remember? Just being like, you know, you were trying to leave, and the security, that you were this close to saying, please, would you call the police and tell them to stop yelling at me? What do you remember about that incident? Did you black out altogether?
No, I remember, I think I was crying.
Oh, yeah.
You were yelling.
Yeah.
No, that was me. I was crying when you were yelling.
How is this good radio, is what I want to know.
How's it good radio?
Yeah, no, this is horrifying to me. This is like some sort of Virginia Woolf, Mark Maron special.
That's every day here. That's the Mark Maron show.
Not Virginia Woolf, Miss Dalloway, but who's afraid of Virginia Woolf?
I'm just trying to get to the bottom of this. I'm just trying to say that I have this anger problem. I'm willing to do something about it. I don't want the guy from downstairs, like that time in Queens, who came up and said, That was the worst. This is why this is an important issue, that I have this like weird anger problem, because I think I'm a good guy. I'm obviously a good husband, and I just have this weird problem that needs to be dealt with, and I'm just talking about it out loud in front of my audience. And that the issue is, never again in my life do I want the guy from downstairs in the apartment below to come up and go, "Is everything okay?" looking at you. You know what I mean? I don't need that, because I'm not. That's not where I'm at. This morning when I asked a guy to take the bedboard away, the guy from next door, after we had that stupid fight last night, now I got to look at him like, yeah, underneath everything that he's saying to me, I think he's going, "Man, you have a problem with anger." And he might not even be thinking that, but out of my guilt, I got to live with that. I don't want to live with that. So I'm going to anger management. I'm going to tell the people on the air what it's like. I'm going to help them through it. Mm-hmm. And you go do the other side of that. What's the other side of anger management? You don't know?
Mishnah, where are you playing next?
Vegas at the Palms Casino.
Oh, man, that sounds exciting.
Yeah,
that's
it is.
Tomorrow.
It's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it.
Were you sensing an uncomfortable moment, Jim?
No, not at all. No, I think we've gone through the subject.
We're done.
I mean mine. I think it's okay that you've confessed that you have a perceived problem with anger and everything.
Okay.
I think it's time to get over with and move on.
I think this is really bad for your on-air persona, Mark.
What are you talking about?
I just don't think this is the kind of image you want to be putting out into the world.
A guy who takes responsibility for his problems?
Okay. You know what? If that's a good framework for it.
You don't think that anybody who knows me or seen me on television might think like, "I bet you that guy yells occasionally." You think that's a stretch?
That's true.
Huh?
Okay, that's true. I'll go with that.
We're going to come back with a short order of news, and then we're going to Vegas if we make our plane late, person. Baby, I love you. I do.
Lower the voice.
I'm sorry.
If you really believe Mark Maron is the one and true Christ, you won't want to miss his short order news coming up next. Amen.
And now you may all go to hell, and I will go to Texas. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. It's Friday. I hope you have a great weekend. I feel better. I was being honest. I wanted to be honest. And Mishnah, you were getting a little upset with me on, you think that this is weird radio? What? What are you thinking? Yeah.
It just felt a little trippy to me. I don't know, to be talking about this stuff on the air and, you know.
We're here to help people. I'm here to, my honesty, I can't help but be honest. You know me.
I'm very happy that you're willing to take action around something you think is a problem. It inspires me to want to take action in my life against things you think are a problem that I have.
I think she just said she's going to get help and leave me. Is that what she's, am I misinterpreting that?
No, not at all.
No, not at all.
I think that's what she said, and she
meant. What I'm saying is, I need a very attractive therapist.
Uh-huh. Read what Orbit Boy wrote. This is the first blog post today. There's no reason to be uncomfortable about what we're talking about. I think this could be, it helps people, I think.
This is what Orbit Boy said.
On the blog.
Mark.
Yeah.
I hope you and Jim can settle things, because I sure could use some ideas right now. It says nothing about Mishnah.
It doesn't?
Yeah. It's me and you. You misread that.
I want you guys
that.
To settle things, too.
And it said Mishnah. You thought it said Mishnah in there.
It doesn't?
No. It says Jim.
Oh, that's weird. I thought it was me and Mishnah. I thought I was helping people out.
You know what? There might be some women out there, too, with problems with yelling.
Okay.
Woo! Yeah.
I mean, it's conceivable.
When you yell at me, that's the weirdest thing, and I've had this experience with you before, is that I yell and yell and yell, but as soon as you yell, I'm like, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I don't like to yell.
See, that maybe
that's the problem, is that I don't like doing that.
That's what's missing. You guys start yelling.
We gotta really turn into that couple. I always think of that couple in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Like,
oh,
I just don't want to be
hilarious.
That couple.
I love that couple, man.
They are funny. Don't get me wrong. They're a laugh a minute.
Shut up, Martha.
I'm telling you, it's not going to be great until the cops come and take us both away in cuffs. You understand? It's got to be. We got to be in this together.
I know
baby.
This. If you had been in that Grove parking lot and been a gay couple, the cop would not have come around there.
You don't think so?
No.
Because of the, you think it's the chick?
Yeah.
They come to help the chick?
Yeah.
Damsel in distress?
Yes.
Hey, there's a skirt that needs help up
even
on level 7.
Even if one of the gay couples was crying, though?
Yeah.
Mm. Like, even if the bottom was crying.
Quit. Oh,
okay.
You know, tops and bottoms cry, baby. You should know that about us. Look, now, the crying thing, that's a tactic, too. You don't have to cry, you know?
You know what? I'm really trying not to.
Right now?
No, just
in
general.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, wow, this really has gone bad.
No, hey, just on stage.
All right. We're going to go to Vegas, so let me do this now. We know a lot of you, a lot of news went on today. You might not know what it is. We don't want you to be uninformed or catch you off guard there. Here's the Mark Maron Show Short Order News, second version. What are you showing me?
Like Mishina's webpage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, with Phyllis Diller, yeah. All right. As part of his new pay-per-view show to air later this month, O.J. Simpson pretends to sell a white Bronco at a used car lot, boasting that it made him famous. America, where no crime goes unrewarded. And I want to do the other joke again because it was so damn good. O.J. defends the stunt, saying it's meant to be a joke, admitting what really made him famous was severing his ex-wife's head, but they had no use for that at the used car lot. The Senate gave final approval Thursday to a $70 billion election year package of tax cuts for investors and families with above-average incomes. For the most part, the bill was split along party lines, Republicans voting in favor and people wanting to get reelected voting against. The cartoonist who draws the Blondie comic strip is opening up a restaurant chain to sell oversized sandwiches modeled after those eaten by Dagwood Bumstead. In a related story, the creator of Hagar the Horrible will be starting a chain of restaurants that will allow customers to steal food from primitive villagers and rape their daughters. That's the Short Order News, Friday version. Oh, don't crumple it. That's right, because we've got to make note of these things. What's your website, baby? I linked to it on my site, but let's tell people what it is so they can go and rally behind you and say, leave that yelling man.
It's just my blog.
The blog. Is it how do you get there?
It's Mishna, Mishna dot blogspot dot com. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
And Jim, what's your website?
It's dot blogspot, not at blogspot. Mishna dot blogspot.
All right, okay. I love you so much, man. We're gonna have a good time in Vegas.
Oh, I can't wait.
I'm not gonna yell. You know what I love is like when we start
yelling at a hotel is its own thing though. That's like when the people from the front desk.
Yeah. You know what's good, though? When he yelled to jazz music. We had an argument to jazz music. But did you just hear a Ghost of Machines? There's Zeitgeist? What was that? You don't know what it was? Where it came from? That was a noise. You all heard it, though, right? I don't have a...
That was somebody yelling.
Did something else just happen? Was that your phone? Oh, it's her phone. Oh. She's Andy's out there going, what the hell? All right. Look, folks, have a great weekend, and good night, sheeple. There you go. There are the drums. There's the Artie Shaw. Be careful. Thanks, baby.
You're welcome.
It's okay, right? It was okay.
Don't yell.